ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Tammy Shipley believed someone was out to hurt her.
I thought someone was after me and I wanted to just be safe.
She's put under 24-hour surveillance.
I tried to get in contact multiple times.
I think you make a phone call, nobody knows where I am.
And then something strange happens.
She just drank and drank and had something like 20 litres of pure water.
Ambulance emergency.
I've got a woman unconscious.
Tammy's story. Search Background Briefing on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fresh analysis from the Reserve Bank, released just today, paints the clearest picture yet of Australian housing investors. So who exactly are they, and what does this detailed demographic data really tell us about the property market's winners and its losers? Meanwhile, liquor giant Endeavour Group's announced it's exiting its vineyards and wineries altogether. So what does the future of one of Australia's largest pub and bottle shop owners look like in a world where people are drinking less and where we might have reached peak wine? Welcome to ABC Business Daily. I'm Michael Yander.
And I'm Alicia Barry, ABC finance reporter and host of The Business on Thursdays.
So Alicia, I've stolen the keys to the car. The boss has taken over for one day only before Carrington gets back next week.
Well, I'm in your hands, Michael. Let's get this show on the road.
Indeed. So first up, we've got this new report just released from the Reserve Bank called Insights on New Data on Australian Housing Investors. Sounds, you know, incredibly riveting. Is it usual for the bank to put out these kind of reports?
Well, the RBA does periodically put out these bulletins, as they call them, from various people in their research team. This one is from Alexandra McKilson, and it really digs quite deep using some newly available micro data to really find out who Australia's housing investors are. It goes back to 1999 and covers the period all the way up to 2023. And it may come as no surprise, I don't think this is a spoiler, that Australia's housing investors are wealthier, older, and they come as not too much risk to the financial system. And that was sort of the purpose of this report.
Yeah, so let's dig into that. So Alexandra McKilson is a senior analyst at the Reserve Bank. She's actually in the financial stability department of the bank. So the purpose of this report is not to tell us about the equity or not of housing investors. It's basically for the RBA to get a gauge on how safe housing investors are and whether there's a risk to the Australian banking system from housing investors not paying their loans.
Yeah, that's right. And given the sort of, I guess, demographic of who these housing investors are, it becomes quite clear that they're not really, because they haven't taken on the huge amount of debt that you would have to take on if you were going to be a housing investor right now. So there are still sort of young people entering the market, that's true. But the bulk have been housing investors really throughout that period, and they do come from that high income spectrum. In fact, 10% of the property, or 10% of the working age population, are property investors, and they hold 20% of the properties in the country. So you can kind of get that idea, and it does just really, and I keep saying it, but skew to that wealthier, older demographic.
So, like, pulling apart what this data is, it's called the Person Level Integrated Data Asset, PLIDA, from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, which is quite new, and they've gone back historically and put together data from the tax office. So these are looking at individual housing investors in Australia, hence that 20% of the housing stock, even though more than around a third of Australians rent. But some of those rentals are owned by governments or by trusts or by partnerships or by corporations, and those aren't covered in this data. So it's just looking at your mum and dad investors, basically. And as you say, there's about 2.3 million of them. So 10% of the working age population. What else did we learn about who property investors are? Because we often get this stereotype of the mum and dad.
Between 1999 and 2023, the typical age of the property investor went from 45 to 51 years.
That's
right?
A pretty substantial shift.
Yeah, that's right.
Of the middle, the typical property investor.
And it kind of implies, I suppose, that there aren't a lot of younger people doing this to shift that age down.
There was something really interesting in the age demographics of this data, which is that when you go back to that 1999-2000 period, you had 9% of property investors under 30. That's fallen to 4% or less. Mm. You had 25% of property investors aged between 30 and 39. That's fallen down to about 18%. You had the majority, or the biggest single group of property investors, was aged 40 to 49. That's now fallen by 5 percentage points. And it's the over 60s that have massively expanded, more than doubled, and now are the biggest group of property investors at 28%. And the interesting thing about that, Alicia, is that if you look at who was 40 to 49 in the year 2000 and who's now over 60, basically this shows that the boomers have dominated property investment in Australia, not just now, but for the past couple of decades, and it's kind of followed them as they've aged.
And it says several factors explain the large share of high-income housing investors, and we will attribute that to the boomers. We know they have benefited from tax concessions like negative gearing and capital gains tax discounts. Of course, rising property prices since 2000, housing markets in Australia have absolutely taken off.
So you've got equity, mate.
Yeah,
use exactly. The equity from That's one right. house to buy another.
The entry costs in 2000, very different to what they are now. So they've had all of those benefits. And of course, those rising house prices over that course of time, you know, capital gains tax discount still available for them. But this is about to change because we've had the government's announcement. The bill has been put into the House today by the Treasurer around the changes to negative gearing, hiving it off only to new builds, and the essential scrapping of the capital gains tax discount in its current form.
And when you see this kind of data, I mean, it does seem to lend some weight to the government's arguments about the tax changes being about intergenerational equality, because this whole thing about, you know, these changes could hit the growing rent-vestor sector where young people are trying to get an investment property to break into the housing market. Well, you know, the proportion of property investors who are under 40 years old has plunged. So while there are no doubt some rent-vestors, there's not as many as there were two decades ago.
No, you can absolutely see why the government had to do something. The interesting thing is, and we've had the drawbridge analogy, that sort of being pulled up for anyone that wanted to do what the boomers had done. You know, you're lining up trying to get into the nightclub and the bouncer pulls across the rope. It's not available anymore. But Michael, how do you think these changes the government's implementing will make it easier for younger people to enter the property market? Are we going to see home prices fall?
Yeah, well, a lot of the forecasts are that they will fall relative to what they would have done otherwise. And we are starting to see some forecasts. I think Louis Christopher from SQM recently came out and said we could see falls of up to 9% because of both interest rate rises that we've had and these tax changes. But I guess the general argument the government is making is young people can't really get ahead by becoming a property investor anyway, or not most young people, unless they come from a family that can really help them get started or they're unusually high income. And so for the bulk of young people, they're trying to take some investors out of the market so that more young people can get into home ownership and try and boost that home ownership rate. So whether it will work, we'll have to wait and see, but that's clearly the aim. And I think the government would welcome research like this, which really does highlight that property investors, as you say, Alicia, they're older and getting older, they're wealthier and getting wealthier. The top fifth of income earners own about 40% of the investment properties. And the middle income, those mum and dad investment property owners, are actually shrinking as a group relative to what they were in 2000.
Mm.
So a lot of the arguments against these changes don't tally with what we're seeing in this kind of research.
Absolutely. And we have our esteemed colleague, Gareth Hutchins, who is digging into this topic a little more deeply. He's actually writing an article on it. It's on our website now if you want to jump on and have a look and give us your feedback too.
Not only are boomers dominating the housing market, as it turns out, but they're also the big drinkers, and they're getting older and they're not drinking as much. And it seems that their children and now grandchildren aren't drinking so much either. We've just seen a lot of stuff come out over the past week or so about particularly wine and wine consumption.
And it's something that Jane Herdlicker, who is the boss of Endeavour Group, is very attuned to. Now, she has taken over this enormous hotels and drinks business at the beginning of the year. She was previously the CEO of Virgin and yesterday released her first strategy update for the company. Now, Endeavour Group is not doing that well because, as you say, Michael, these social trends are shifting around drinking, and she has a job to sort of turn this business around.
And when you say not going so well, I believe it's at a record low share price since it was split off out of Woolworths about, what was it, 5 years ago?
Yeah, that's right. It listed in 2021 as a separate entity. So it was originally part of Woolworths business groups. They split it out. The company itself owns Dan Murphy's, BWS, a number of hotels businesses. It's picked up other businesses along the way like Jimmy Brings. So it really does dominate. But when we're talking about the share price, it listed around $6 from memory. It's now sitting at around $2.80 something. It's down over 20% this year. It fell about 5% yesterday and it's still declining today. Now, Jane Herdlicker said she's going to sell a number of wineries, the actual vines in the ground, to sort of, I guess, streamline the business. She says she doesn't want to hold the assets. She'd rather just retail the product. She's keeping a few core ones, ones that are in the Barossa Valley, some in New Zealand that really resonate with those premium customers, but she's making quite a few changes and it hasn't arrested the fall in the share price. She's also cutting the dividend payout. Now, I saw one analyst, Simon Marwini, quoted as saying, he's from Allan Gray, that he agrees with cutting the payout ratio, that is the dividend paid to shareholders, but he doesn't like the idea of selling off assets, winery assets, in a down market. So
I was going to ask you about that because it seems like a really distressed time to try and sell a winery.
Especially when people aren't really drinking as much as they were. So where's the demand going to come from? And I know, Michael, you have been looking at just how much people are drinking at the moment.
Yes. I mean, personally, I'm a wine consumer, but it seems like I'm in a growing minority globally. There was a really interesting report that hit my inbox last week from BMI, which is a research division of the Fitch Group. And it looked at global wine consumption and forecast out to 2030. In short, its conclusion is that we've reached peak wine. Global wine consumption, it thinks, peaked at 25.4 billion litres in 2017. Last year, it was 23.1 billion litres that people drank globally, which sounds like a lot, but it's in decline. And probably the most stunning figure out of that is that French wine consumption has halved. So the home of wine, really, the spiritual home of wine, their consumption has fallen from 71.8 litres per person. That's a lot of wine to drink in a year. That's on average. So some French were drinking a lot more than that back in 2000, but they've really cut back and are now drinking 41 litres a year, which still sounds like a lot, but it's almost half of what they were drinking 20 years ago.
Well, I come at this from a different perspective because I stopped drinking. I think my children drove me to stop drinking, not the other way. So I'm actually part of this global... Don't laugh, Mike.
I tend to want to have a glass of wine after my kids have gone to bed.
Yeah, I think it can work both ways. But I am sort of part of this, you know, social trend toward non-drinking. And it's so interesting to me that it's really picking up pace. Does this research give any indication as to why, or it just simply outlines the shrinking consumption?
I think there is a health factor. People have become more health conscious in the last 25 years and reducing alcohol consumption is part of that. Also, wine's just kind of gone off trend. After a big increase in global wine consumption in the first part of this century, the first decade or so, it's really dropped off, particularly among younger people. They're looking at non-alcoholic alternatives. Craft beer has obviously gone through its own boom, as we've seen here in Australia. And I live in the inner west, so there are about two dozen craft breweries that I could walk to from my house. And like spirits consumption's also taken off, and particularly in China, and that's a really stunning one. So other than that French figure, which is obviously dramatic, Chinese consumption peaked at 1.8 billion litres in 2017 as Chinese upper class grew and it was seen as a sign of affluence to drink these premium wines, even if they were occasionally mixed with Coca-Cola, which anyway, that's sacrilege. Yep. But Chinese wine consumption fell to just 159 million litres. Mm. You know, that's a huge drop. And
a big export market for Australia.
Well, we obviously got banned from China for a while, and that's also part of what's hit the market. But yeah, for a company like Treasury Wine Estates, and I just looked at their share price, down to $4.25, the lowest since 2014. And they've really been hit because their big luxury brands like Penfolds were part of that wave of getting wine into China and making it a thing for the upper classes. And that's all dropped off dramatically. And I have to declare an interest here. I have a small amount of shares in a company called Australian Vintage Group, which is better known for its key brand is the McGuigan wines. And I've been a personal cost, albeit not very large because I don't have many shares, but of their share price absolutely tanking. I mean, it had already tanked before I bought it, but since I bought it, it's gone from 45 cents a share down to about 5 or 6 cents a share. So all of these big Australian winemakers have been hit by domestic trends and this global trend, and particularly the move away from wine consumption in China. So big business issue as well as an interesting social shift.
Yeah, absolutely. And big jobs ahead for the bosses of these companies as they look to navigate those changing social trends, because they are still answerable to shareholders. And they have to deliver profits and returns.
But a great time if you're a wine drinker who loves specials, because particularly red wines, I can tell you, if you go shopping online, there are a lot of great discounts because these luxury Australian producers can't shift the good stuff overseas anymore. So we're getting it at really good prices here.
And that is a silver lining if you are a wine drinker indeed, Michael.
It definitely is, Alicia. And that's all we've got time for on today's episode of Business Daily. Tomorrow, be sure to catch That's Business with Alan Koller. He's speaking with AI giant Anthropic's chief economist, Peter McCrory. You won't want to miss that interview. And Carrington will be back in the chair taking over the keys from Monday. Remember, don't miss an episode. Make sure you're following ABC Business Daily on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. Please like us. And if you want to send in a question, email abcbusinessdaily@abc.net.au. I'll catch you later, Alicia.
See you soon, Michael.